There's one other thing I wanted to mention about this, specific to our discussion yesterday about the forest fire of sectarianism. Three short things. One is, here we're hearing from Narada, and we're appreciating, and it's appropriate to appreciate from our principal authority, Aporusheya Shabda Praman, this Srimad Bhagavatam is our principal authority, and there's elaborate explanation as to why we accept it as our principal authority, but in any case, we accept it as our principal authority. So much so that at least for us, for followers of our sampradaya, if there's something else stated somewhere else, we accept the Srimad Bhagavatam as the final authority. Just as a for example, in Mahabharata, there's a description of what happened after Krishna left with the Pandavas. What happened after Krishna left? Because each one of them had done something, they made a boo-boo, they made a mistake. They had to see hell, Mahabharata. Srimad Bhagavatam says, after Krishna left, they followed Krishna because they were attached to Krishna. In their self-same bodies, they went to Krishna. Now this says this and that says that. Now, what to do? Dilemma. There was a question about that yesterday evening in our discussion. So Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the ultimate conclusion. There's a purpose behind, one might say, this way. Mahabharata its emphasis is upon Dharma. What is to be done? What is not to be done? And the consequences if you do what is to be done, you're protected by Dharma. And if you violate Dharma, there's consequences. And that's a primary message. Stand by virtue. Live by Dharma. The message of the Bhagavatam is, come to the stage of unalloyed devotion, unmixed devotion to the Supreme. Bhakti. So, that's the authority, that's the Supreme Court. Doesn't mean the lower court, you know, we throw it away. You know, the Supreme Court, the ultimate authority we accept. If it says something about Krishna's pastimes in another one of the Puranas, and it speaks of the same pastime in the Bhagavat Purana, we accept the conclusion of the Bhagavat Purana. It's really simple. On what basis? It's the topmost authority. Why do we say topmost authority? Tune into the Tattva Sandarbha course. There's a reason why. It's the Amala Purana, according even to the other Puranas. Anyway, without a whole long Tattva Sandarbha class. That's our principal authority. Now, when we regard our principal authority, are there other teachings from other traditions that speak of the same principle? Yes. And we honor the principle, not, the ism, where that principle is couched or is rested. At the same time, while we honor wherever that principle comes, so that the sectarianism spirit is not operative. At the same time, we have fidelity to our tradition, and there's not just blindly, but there's reason. Maybe some of you attended Radha Krishna's presentation on belief and reason. He Tamal Krishna Maharaj wrote a whole book on that topic. Of course, it wasn't for a devotee audience, it was for the academic audience, the role of belief, the role of reason in theology. Because he was attending university at Southern Methodist University, you know, a Christian university. So that's a big topic amongst theologians. What's the role of reason in theology? What's the role of belief in theology? And sometimes it seems like, you know, they're in conflict with one another, or what, they're competing with one another, or something like that. But there's reason why, and there's authority why we accept what we accept. You know, we accept Srimad Bhagavatam and its conclusions. It doesn't mean we reject or look down upon other things. Rather, we should respect. So this is on this topic of yesterday evening. We respect. There's a whole trajectory, just like the Vedas. What to speak of outside of the tradition of Vedic culture. There, within the Vedas, there's vast percentage. Some figure has been, I've heard, 90%, some vast number, deal with Karmakanda Yajna. Now there's a purpose for the Karmakanda Yajna, and one should not denigrate. It's one of the offenses. It's at least how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes denigration. This is the, you know, the holier-than-thou message you were speaking about. This is within our own tradition, that, you know, this is better than that one. We can certainly, by discernment, say this is the mature fruit of the Vedic tree of knowledge, by way that the whole of the Vedas is described as a, or compared to, a kalpa vriksha. Kalpa means desire, vriksha means tree. It's a desire tree. It fulfills all desires. So for some person, there's necessities of life that they understand. By going to the Vedas, I can get all necessities of life, like a supermarket, a cornucopia of health, wealth, good husband for my daughter, and long life, and, you know, success in my business, and, you know, sanctify my new home when I buy my new home, and so many things. I begin a journey, and auspiciousness for the beginning of the journey, and, you know, all different aspects of life, because it's a desire tree. And then there's the ripened fruit of the desire tree. So the ripened fruits of the desire tree should not denigrate or look down upon the tree, because the tree is providing what people need. And people that go to that tree, they're pious people. We honor those pious people. And we would not put them down, but wish to appreciate their piety and help them to consider you know, what the ripened fruit has to offer, so to speak, using just metaphorical language. This message of Srimad Bhagavatam is very wonderful. So now go outside of our tradition, and similarly, those who, because I've just spent some time in China, and I believe we're going to find more and more and more and more and more and more influence of Buddhism in America. Not just because, in part because more Chinese people are moving here, but it's popular for reasons. It fulfills this market for people that don't have to submit to anybody. And they can be spiritual. Really trendy. I don't believe in organized religion, and I don't want to surrender anybody, but I want to be spiritual. So, really, what Buddhism is, they, you know, for the most part, people don't really know. But, you know, it's just under the label of, either I'm a free soul, or I embrace Buddhism. So I had this very interesting conversation with a millionaire Buddhist while I was in China. 2-hour conversation. And, you know, the values that they hold, they're strongly adhere to the values that they hold. And it's good. You know, compassion is the, you know, numero uno. And because they're very successful, their happiness is in acts of compassion. It's not accumulation and enjoying. It's how they can do different acts of compassion. Fantastic. And they know the downside. They shared, you know, they had just come from a place where they gave this very large sum of money to an orphanage after having evaluated over a period of time the work of the orphanage. They appreciated they were persons of integrity. They really used what resource was given to them for the orphanage and not for themselves. So they gave a large, but they very quickly said it, but you know, the tendency is when somebody receives something, they want more. So they don't stick around because the next thing is, you know, greed or whatever, gratitude, but also greed, more and more. So they don't like to do that. Rather than the happiness is in the act of being charitable. And this particular individual was wanting wisdom, because wisdom will help them be more successful so they can do more acts of charity. So they want wisdom. And the conversation with me is maybe I can get some wisdom over here from this guy, this fellow. So, I learned a lot. No concept of absolute truth. Certainly no concept of absolute truth as a person. No concept of bhakti. Service like this verse. Now, how to regard that? Well, here's a person that's on a trajectory. And through at least Krishna has made an arrangement that this person I had the opportunity to mix with, and I tried for 2 hours just to convey the message of what bhakti is, and it didn't go in. Without the detail. 2 hours. But they, you know, they heard, they're very intelligent, just, you know, discriminating in a certain way, and with values and convictions that weren't malleable. They weren't eager to, they were categorizing what kind of wisdom they wanted, that which would make them more successful so they could do more acts of compassion. They're very selective about the wisdom. And it's so many things. You know, wisdom comes from a teacher, right? I mean, what wisdom? You have your mother and you have a daughter. So you're sharing wisdom with your daughter. So the wisdom that you have, where's that coming from? Blank. Anyway, how we can regard to avoid the peril for ourselves and within our community, within the association amongst other Vaishnavas, how to avoid the peril of sectarianism is to appreciate different people are in different stages of their spiritual trajectory. And let us honor that. And at the same time, not like saving them kind of idea that we don't like at all when we won't go into it, but certain people have that idea in relation to ourselves. You know, it's not so wholesome. Not with that mood, but in the mood of being in service. This is a wonderful quality, this quality of whatever it is. in this case, compassion. And now please consider. It's something like what Prabodhananda Saraswati wrote in his Chaitanya Chandramrita that Prabhupada would refer to from time to time. My dear sir, you are very learned, very pious, and very qualified. And then the person hearing that, oh, I can see, here's an intelligent person. They recognize my virtue. And then, what is it that you have to say? And then Prabodhananda Saraswati in his special mood saying, please try to, you know, set aside all of this and just try to understand the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, that's, you know, a very swift statement, but it's more, in one sense, describing a principle. And a principle is not like dismiss everything when we interact with people, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, there's different approaches. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in contrast with Bhaktisiddhanta, he was described, his biographers described him as the method of humble persuasion. He would sit with people who were proud and filled with their sense of their own greatness and knowledge and so forth, and he would entertain them in a social way and by humble persuasion encourage them to consider the gift of Lord Chaitanya and the gift of bhakti through the Srimad Bhagavatam and so forth. And his son had a different approach. He would confront persons that were putting forward in the spiritual marketplace ideas that were not of the highest standard. And were covering others and compromising themselves and others, you know, the what the human form of life is meant to attain. So we had a different approach. Then our founder Acharya, he would do different things at different times. Some, you know, with scholars or certain people, he would be a little confrontational. And in general, he had, you know, had diversity in his approach. He would speak, you know, what the principles of, like he's doing here, the principles of higher consciousness. And encourage persons to take shelter of Krishna to achieve mitigation of the implication in matter. You have to go to the person who is in control of creation, maintenance, and destruction if you're going to become free from the influences of what goes on during the cosmic manifestation, the things that you don't like about it. When to speak of birth and death, the seemingly unavoidable consequences. Okay. Any comments, questions, discussion? Yeah.
Okay, multiple things. But one is something that we've been discussing, Thomas and I, some others as well. This long-standing tendency you're speaking about, sometimes we advise, as opposed to Bhaja Sarvatmana Harim, or service to Krishna, that persons look to some perhaps psychological approaches to identify what those, where those long-standing tendencies may be coming from, at least from the context of the current life. And try to at least identify it and be aware of it and maybe move forward from there. As opposed to just Bhaja Sarvatmana Hari. I've heard you speak something about this before, but I'd like you to perhaps in this forum share some thoughts on that.
I'll keep it simple. because it can get really complicated real fast. Our real simple is our primary shelter is our primary shelter. And one who does not recognize our primary shelter will not be able to progress towards the goal very well. That's certainly the indication of our founder Acharya and our predecessor Acharyas. They did, to my knowledge, they did not espouse other things. They espoused the primary means of deliverance, hearing and chanting of the 8 to 9 limbs of bhakti. So, and part two is, for some, they're engaging themselves in the primary activities of bhakti, and they find they're stuck. There's, you know, they're hooked on, they're connected to something that's very, very strong, and no matter what they do, they can't get unhooked, or they're unstuck. I think unstuck is a better term. So, for such people, assistant modalities, particularly, you know, common in this world is, the modern term is trauma, and then trauma therapy that, you know, just built in, reruns or fears or something to that effect. If someone can become if someone can become free from that stuck position, then their sadhana bhakti can help them move. Now, part three, big caution. When someone does some of those other things, if their primary shelter is not very strong, then the secondary, these assisting things, can become their primary shelter, or their faith, or their religion, or, you know, their, where their energy goes, where their attention goes, instead of through the primary shelter one. So, with discrimination, with guidance, one may take up these things. And a special conclusion, special importance is primary shelter remains primary shelter.
Can someone see the, let's say, resources, and I guess it's obvious, but can someone see the resources that you receive as secondary help to progress on your primary path as coming from Krishna? And
everything's coming from Krishna.
Sure.
You know, let's just take, for example, marriage. So, best if someone has nice training before they get married. And then those principles don't change when they get married, but marriage is to assist. You know, I have a certain psychophysical nature that seemed to be most suited for marriage. The principle doesn't change. And then, going along in the course of marriage, I may find that there's some domestic something, a bump in the road, and, you know, we may need some help. So it doesn't take away from the primary. And all of that should be done under guidance. And if one doesn't have guidance, then, you know, that's unfortunate. One should find some guidance.
The ability to keep the primary shelter primary and not make the secondary stuff come above is critical to have that guidance. And
well, it's critical to have really strong sadhana, the good foundation. You can't build a house without a good foundation. And part of it is guidance. And not just, you know, for a while and then you wave goodbye. That's impersonal. Something else? Yes?
On this topic of interfaith dialogue, the two of them, I had a question for a while. It's a challenge that I find in reaching out to a college audience. So I'm part of an interfaith group at Washu, and you know, there's all these pastors and you know, priests representing their different faiths, and they're very involved in the community in terms of charity or outreach. And I understand that our philosophy is, you know, don't just save the cord of the drowning man. You know, so we are about providing spiritual training and education. But also, I feel as the representative Hare Krishna priest, I don't have anything to show in terms of community involvement at a local level. So sometimes we can be seen as too isolationist.
Sure. When I was a very new devotee, living in Boston, there was a very nice devotee named Krunamoya, who wanted to go, I was in Boston Temple, he wanted to go to the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, big university, huge university, and there's four other universities in the area, and you know, because Prabhupada had endorsed like that. And I remember having a conversation, looking up to him, and others, you know, similarly sharing, beware of, don't become sucked into the scene. And you're going on a mission, don't become part of the scene. But part of when you go into a situation, especially academia, I mean in the corporate world, but especially academia, there's all these expectations. Political correctness and so many expectations. And, you know, it's kind of like self-identity gets lost and one adopts the identity of the place in order for acceptance and, you know, in the name of being effective, and it's real easy. Karunamoya just disappeared into the energy. Nice devotee, fantastic devotee. Very sincere. And on and on. So it's special to not get drawn into loss of self in order to be accepted by people. So with that caution, that's like this, you know, the priority stays priority, emphasizing in that manner. Then some other things, you know, investing time and resource and energy in some other. And one of the ways to do that some other is being a leader that sees that other people have the facility to do some other. Not necessarily, you know, your focus is very specific with your children, and then your part in the program, but then being a supporter or an endorser of someone who, you know, is more of a karma yoga type person who likes to do those types of things and encourage and support without, you know, losing focus on the primary. Easier said than done. you know, because you're involved with, I mean, like what Vaisheshika Prabhu does is he gave his whole presentation in our meetings in Chicago. One of the major forces of book distribution is the youth. He was describing, you know, they really like it and they're really good. And when they sit down and have prasadam together, when they go out to distribute books, there's somebody, and you know, there's adult supervision. So one of their adults was sitting next to the youth that were, and during prasadam, they're talking about how they're going to increase book distribution. They have a taste. They're not talking about, you know, what's the latest game or, you know, whatever it is or whatever it is. They have a taste. Now, should they, in addition to that, train those young people, in addition to that, something that, you know, they prepare prasadam and take prasadam to a, someplace? Sure. And then, there's, you know, what you have to show. It's not just that I go out and I, something. So, there's an example, or some ladies from the community. Of course, make sure the primary stays in the primary position. And then the secondary is in the secondary position. But there are things that we can do that are not at all a compromise, and they're perceived as, oh, that's very nice. As a for example, another for example, for a period of time, the youth group in Chicago, particularly the group that was in Naperville, they were going to old age homes, and they had a whole thing. You know, it was kirtan for a while, and a little, someone spoke, Rajiv Kattar, because he's a really good speaker, would speak something, and then they have a little skit or a drama. And then prasadam. And you know, they loved it. They're so bored. You know, have some young people come in and do something that's lively and energetic and energizing. You know, wow. Etc. And one other, for example, is there's an idea that we discussed that in Chicago amongst the GBCs, perhaps we can make a link with the Food for Life programs in India, where they're doing humongous work, and not even so much amongst our members, but be a representative of that and make it available to people who are inclined in that way. Maybe not necessarily our, you know, sadhaka members as the main persons, but one of those persons can take up the cause of promoting the Food for Life thing and have it on our website. And if people want to do that, that's an option. And there's another. So without having to, like, you know, change the direction of the ship and go in the direction, you know, 3 degrees headed towards philanthropy, just stay on the course of the primary and see the, you know, constituents and propensities of constituents and do different things. And even amongst our children and our adults, you know, periodically do something. Prepare prasadam and make it available to a shelter and the, you know, whatever it is. And some persons that like that, some, they do this, I think, in Houston. Some ladies come together once a month, and you know, the youth have a program where they make sandwiches and this and that. You know, it's all vegetarian, and they don't like serve it; they just box it and hand it over. And you know, the youth like it; it's wholesome. And you know, we're you know, for people that want to see you're doing something for the community, there's something for the community. And I would recommend, you know, start modest, and see what where there's most attraction, and grow it slowly. Make sure the primary stays in the primary position. It's 9:00. I'm going to end. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.